Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Our Voice Radio. I'm your host on the Book Experience. I'm Miss Chanel, and tonight we have a very special guest. We have Nikki Alston. She is the author of Love or Loyalty. It deals with a lot of issues that, you know, we in the Black community, we really don't deal with, mainly depression and, you know, faith. I mean, all nationalities deal with infidelity and love and faithfulness. But one of the things that I really liked about this book is that she deals with depression. And so without further ado, please welcome Nikki. Evening, Nikki. How are you this evening?
Good evening. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, thank you for coming on again. Boy, I tell you, today has just been one of those days where I love the fact that Kindle, you can read books on Kindle, but I now realize why I have always loved hardback books.
Had some issues today, huh?
Oh my gosh, I am so dependent on my Kindle for everything. Especially if it has all my books on it. I mean, and I put notes on it, and I highlight things. And Oh my gosh, I was so frustrated. And so then what I had to do, because I have so much on my phone, I had to actually rephone.
Oh, man. Yeah, because I was going to say you can do a backup.
Yes, I had to reset my phone, and it was just, so I am probably going back to the old fashioned. I'm going to have my Kindle, but I think I am really going to go back to my old fashioned ways, the hard act. Oh my gosh, that was so frustrating. It was so extremely frustrating when everything, and I'm like, why does everything happen on a Tuesday before I air? Knowing that I'm in panic mode now. So that was my dilemma. That's my dilemma for today.
Well, at least you worked it out.
Right, and then when I reset my phone, I didn't look at the time zone for the radio, and so I couldn't get on. And it kept saying, you have 9 hours, 9 hours. And I'm like, 9 hours? We air in 10 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to panic. Okay, so I'm just going to call customer service. She couldn't do it, and then she had to go in the back way to change it, and she's like, okay, you're all set. So We just got this fixed like 2 minutes before. So I was like, oh, my gosh, Fish is going to call me in 10 minutes.
Wow.
Try to fix that. The show is not coming on. Oh,
well, actually,
God.
I was rushing home so I could be here for 7 o'clock.
Well, I was going to wait until I was going to just fill up here. But thank you so much, because I know you said, well, we can reschedule, and I absolutely hate rescheduling people. If I figure if I can take the time to go ahead and schedule people and they've set out, blocked out time, I do not like rescheduling, so I will make it happen, make it work. If we had to go ahead and record this show and then I air it later, it was going to happen. But I appreciate you.
No problem. Not a problem at all.
So, talk about love and loyalty. And thank you again so much for graciously sending me and gifting me that book. So appreciate that.
Wasn't a problem at all. I figured that was the least I could do.
Well, of course, I enjoyed it. I loved it. And one of the things that I'm really pleased that you did, because, and I was reading something else earlier, I was doing some research on something else, and I was reading, and me, and I'm familiar with it myself because I too suffer from depression, and it's not something that's talked about. It's not something that even I don't deal with it, you know, like mm-hmm. I should. But it is something that is actually hereditary.
Right.
And we don't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
yeah.
a lot of
and I think
a lot
mostly African Americans, we don't talk about it, and we definitely don't seek help for it.
Right. And you never know what that one thing is that will take you over that edge, do whatever. So I appreciate the fact that you included that into the storyline because it's
mm-hmm.
not something that we talk about, but we should because it's very prevalent.
Yes, it is.
More than we realize. Right. You know, we don't see a lot of, you know, like, well, now, here you lately, because there was just a mother that threw her child out the 7th-floor window. So you typically didn't see black women or black families, you know, publicly on the news, killing their children, doing things. You know, but I just read a story today where the husband drove his wife and children into the lake and killed the entire family.
Right.
So,
and more than likely,
he was
suffering from some form of depression, and it was just too late.
Right.
Unfortunately, it was too late. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, did you have to research? You know, because, of course, Sandy suffered because of her circumstance.
Right.
You know, so where did you have to research that and pull, where did you pull that from?
I did with everything that I write, if I'm not sure about the topic or maybe I might have a little insight to it, I do research. You know, just to get more facts.
Right.
But this particular story, it just really just came from my head. It wasn't pulled from anything that I was, that I had any close association with.
Oh, okay. Well, you did a good job pulling that out of your head.
Thank you.
Of the other things that I appreciated is that Geraldine refused to sit and watch her daughter go through that.
Yes. Exactly. She epitomized what a mother should be. You know, if you see your child is suffering, you don't give up. You continue to help them, pull them through, be there for them, stand by their side. So in that aspect, she was a great mom, but also, not to give away any parts of the book, she
right,
also
I tried
felt...
That too.
She also felt, I guess you can say, she needed to redeem herself
right.
from things that had transpired in the past.
Right. And do you think that we as mothers, you know, because there's no book on raising children. There is no, of course, Dr. Spock has the book, but that's not for us, you know,
mm-hmm.
for our practical purposes. So if you catch my drift, so
I'm with
no
you.
There's no handbook per se as to how we are to raise our children, especially because of the stigmas that we are faced with in traditional black families. You know, in traditional black homes, it's, you know, what goes in the house stays on in the house.
Mm-hmm.
You don't tell the family business, the secrets, the abuse, whatever type of abuse you have or whatever type of illness you have. You
yes.
keep it in-house, deal with it in the family. And so
mm-hmm.
when the things that Sandy had to deal with growing up, you know, by her stepfather, the things that she had to deal with, now as an adult she's carrying that, you know, into relationships. But then the mother, you know, we as mothers, we do these things. We bring these men into our homes with our children, our female children especially. And we don't really, you know, do background checks. We don't really, they're paying us some attention, and so we delve right in and bring them home to meet us, you know, bring them home and stay up in the house and all kinds of foolishness without
any
regard.
And sadly, this happens more often than we think, you know. And the things that did happen to Sandy while she was growing up, it's a reality. It really does happen in today's society, Black society.
Oh, yes. You know? Oh, yes. And that's another thing that, unfortunately, we sweep under the rug. And so,
exactly.
and because you do that, families do that, you have where you have Sandy's, you have Chanel's, you have different women who are carrying this burden into relationships, into work, into whatever they're going on. And the mind and the body can only handle so much.
Mm-hmm.
And the event will cause.
As you can see, as I addressed in the book, she did carry this baggage over into her relationships, not only her marriage, but all her relationships. And
right.
When we have this type of baggage and we don't know how to deal, and it's not dealt with directly, you sometimes produce like a coping mechanism, which I hit on inside the book. And hers was
right.
To try to forget everything. She never necessarily gave forgiveness for the people that hurted her. She just tried to forget about it.
And you know,
it worked for her for a while.
Right. And you know, and that was one of the things that I was glad that you touched on, because what is the difference between forgetting and forgiveness?
Well, forgetting it definitely doesn't mean that you forgave the person. It's just that you chose to not think about it, to move forward. But as you can see with this story, it still has a way of coming back to the forefront.
Well, yes, right. And no matter what, you know, because until we actually deal with those situations and those instances,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it will, and it'll manifest in other ways. And I think, Nikki, one of the things that we don't really realize, or one of the things that we don't understand, especially as a people, and one of the things that I watched Iyanla a couple weeks ago, and one of the things that she said that really hit home for me when she was talking to the young lady was, and I can't quote it verbatim, but she said that emotions not dealt with become something else in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So what we don't understand is that when we don't deal with what has gone on and we suppress that, those feelings, we suppress or we forgetting it, but we're not. The mind is such an awesome thing. It does not forget anything. So what
exactly.
It does is it stores that information for a later time. And you never know when you're going to have that break and it manifests into something else. You either break down emotionally or you become physically ill.
Exactly. Or you could possibly develop other
yes.
issues.
Oh, of course. And that's certainly, I mean, I just watched an episode of Criminal Minds. So, yes, you definitely can develop all kinds of issues when you don't deal with emotional triggers, emotional issues that you're faced with. You can become psychotic. You become a killer.
Exactly.
I mean, there's all kinds of things that, you know, look at all these serial killers. They didn't just say, wake up one morning and say, I'm going to kill 25 people over a course of 3 months. That was something that it was an emotional something going on that was never dealt with, you know, that was pushed under the rug. So it wasn't dealt with medically because either you didn't have insurance or, you know, for whatever the reason, things aren't dealt with properly. And so, and then we are putting these emotionally hurt beings into society, and look at what we have, chaos.
Chaos, exactly. Yep.
So tonight we are talking to Nikki Alston, one of my favorite authors as well, in case you didn't know. She's a repeat guest.
Mm-hmm.
And she has written Love or Loyalty. Very, very good novel. You, of course, I tell you all the time, I will not steer you wrong. If I don't like something, I will tell you. I won't necessarily tell you, but you'll know. If I don't like a certain thing. And you know what I like things. So I encourage you to read it, especially my generation, my peers. I encourage you, you know, if you're listening online or tuned into us, please go ahead and press 1 if you have a question. And if you've read the book, let Nikki know. And so let's get back to Sean and Sandy. I wasn't expecting that, Nikki.
I have to throw a twist in there, here and there.
Yes, I definitely was not expecting that. I was like, oh, wow. Gee, that was immediate. So, now, one of the things, you know, he was...
At the beginning of their marriage, he wasn't. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I hope this is not giving... Well, it's a spoiler alert. So if you haven't read it, I'm sorry, but I will give the spoiler. His mistress became pregnant.
And you know what? Actually, she wasn't even his mistress. She was more so a one-night stand.
Oh, wow. And that's even worse.
Yeah.
So the one-night stand became pregnant, which happens a lot, too. That happens a great deal. You think you're just going to just do something once, no one knows, and you get a lifetime of remembrance.
And that was the case.
Right. So now, one of the things, and he kind of, he was, she didn't, it didn't come through. The baby didn't make it. She miscarried. He was thankful for that. And so I was kind of like, I understood that because I know someone that went through a situation that they didn't need any more children. And mm-hmm. I was like, Lord, whatever your will, and I hope your will is what I'm thinking, and I'm not going to be upset if it goes that way. Right. You do get some sort of relief, you know, and you know, and I told someone that, and they say, you know, that was a life. It is, but always takes over. So, yeah. But whatever the will was that she became pregnant, it was also the will that it didn't come through.
And Sean was happy. So, he wasn't happy because he was a mean guy or he was going to be not responsible for this child. He was going to take care of the child. He was more so happy because he really loved his wife. And he knew that this baby would be a constant reminder to Sandy of what he did. So he was happy in that aspect because for him, it was like, okay, now he made the mistake, but now he can move. They can actually move forward. And it wouldn't be a constant reminder to Sandy of what he did. So that's why he was happy that the lady, the one-night stand, miscarried.
So, but Sandy didn't forget.
She did forget, and that goes back to her baggage from the past.
Right.
He did forget, but she didn't forgive him.
Okay. So, and unforgiveness actually festers, and it doesn't. Unforgiveness, what people don't realize is unforgiveness does nothing to the people that you're not forgiving. It does nothing to them because they don't know that you don't forgive them. They can apologize, you can accept it, but if you don't forgive them, that does nothing to them. What it does is it hurts you.
Yeah, that's your burden. You know, the people that have done you wrong, they've already moved forward, you know. But if you haven't personally forgiven them for what they've done to you, you're still carrying around that hurt, that disappointment, that betrayal, and it eats away at you.
Right. So then we have
Joseph.
Joseph.
Well, I'm gonna give a spoiler alert because I don't want the readers to think that, you know, she's having like an affair as well because she didn't forgive him. Her husband Sean died. Let's put it that way. And then she meets Joseph Davis.
Yes. See, I try to talk around so we don't tell too much, but it's kind of difficult because when you really like something, you want to know everything and you need to know those things. So it's important. No, she didn't. And then she just had a lot to deal with. Sandy had a lot to deal with. So why do you think that, because you say she forgets, but I don't think we really forget things.
The reason why I said that she forgets is because she was still able to move forward and maintain a relationship with the people that did hurt her.
Yeah.
But at the same time, to the core of herself, she never forgave them. And that's why she had so many issues that led to her depression.
Right. But, you know, it's difficult to forgive people when they're walking around. And I know it's the right thing to do, but it's so difficult when you see people walking around and their life is going on as if they did nothing wrong. As if, you know, and I had a bishop, bless her soul, he's now going on with the Lord. But my bishop, Jordan, because I used to go sit in his office and talk about stuff like that all the time, and I would say, you know, I don't understand. You know, these people did these horrible things, but their life, they're prospering, they're doing this, and I'm suffering. And you know what he would tell me is, he would say, Chanel, you don't know what they're suffering with. You don't know what, you know, what they're dealing with. You don't know what diseases they have in their bodies. You don't know what their situation is. God deals with people the way he sees fit. We can't worry about that. And that's easier said than done.
Of course, especially when you're going through it and you're still dealing with these feelings.
Right.
You know, I understand what he's saying and the point that he's trying to make, but, you know, it's just different when you're actually going through it and you're feeling this hurt and everything and you're looking at the person and they're happy-go-lucky. You know, it's a lot.
Right. Right. It is. It was very disheartening for me. That was one of the things that I identified with Sandy so so much. For all, I didn't go through, I identified with her a great deal. So I always appreciate when I can tap into a character. So I always find myself crying, reading, yes, I was crying reading this book. Crying because you see, I identified with Sandy with me. Sandy is me. And so when you can pick up someone's novel and actually see yourself, but you don't really realize that that's what you're doing until you
right.
read someone else's words and you say, oh,
wow.
That I'm doing that. You know, and so I appreciate, that's what makes me appreciate authors like yourself so much, because I didn't realize that I was really doing some things until I actually read it. You know,
so
what
it was
I'm
an
saying?
Eye-opener
so
for you.
Right, right. It was like a kick in the butt. It was much like how Geraldine was irritated at the supermarket with the woman
mm-hmm.
who was going on and on about depression. And then,
mm-hmm.
yes, that's what it was much like for me. Like, you know you need the help, you know, but again, that's another thing that we don't do either. We don't really ask for assistance. We just try to take it all on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Until
it's true.
You read. Yeah. I appreciate the fact that you write from an honest place. You know, even though it came out of your head, it's from an honest place. It's from a real place where people really reside. This goes on daily.
It does.
It's been a lot of
fun.
Know? So you tell me what love and loyalty is for you.
For me, as you probably know, I usually try to write from like a Christian viewpoint. For me, it's the imperfect person that's striving to be a good Christian. And sometimes we're faced with different obstacles in life that kind of makes that journey even harder. You know, it's hard to say I'm a Christian and then you do certain things that are completely unparalleled to a Christian lifestyle.
Right.
So love or loyalty, it hit on many things. It wasn't just about Sandy. It was about Sandy and other people around her as well. And it just hit a lot of topics, the depression, death, forgiveness. Hold on one second.
Sure. Yes. We are talking with Nikki Alston. She is author of Love and Loyalty, dealing with a lot of things that we find in the Black community as well as other communities. But for all practical purposes, we are women of color, and so I always talk about my own community because that is what I love, that is who I am, that is my core. So we are things that we need to deal with in our community, and so we are speaking with Nikki Alston, Love and Loyalty, and she's giving us her perspective on what love or loyalty is to her.
Yes. So I hope everyone does pick it up, because I do believe that there's a lot of topics within this book that maybe a lot of people can relate with. Like I said before, the depression, infidelity, betrayal, and of course, love and loyalty.
So why was it that Sandy was torn between love and her loyalty for Sean? love Sean.
Well, the title Love or Loyalty, it wasn't about her love for Sean or her loyalty for Sean. Love or Loyalty, love was for Joseph Davis and her loyalty towards Sean. Now, if I go in any further about that, it's going to definitely give away the book, but you know the circumstances behind her relationship with Joseph and his family. That tested her loyalty to Sean. So that's why it's titled Love or Loyalty. It was either her love for Joseph or her loyalty for Sean.
And so is that difficult for women to, when they're going through either the type of separation that Sandy went through or separation, involuntary separation, well, that's still involuntary separation, or let's say incarceration or just a devastating breakup, because you still find yourself, you know, you really don't give yourself permission to move on to love someone else. And so do you think we're blocking the real love or the love that we can experience from someone else?
She wasn't, at first she wasn't willing to even give herself a chance to love another man. That was her loyalty to Sean and also her love. And once when he was removed from her life, she was basically willing to settle with just her, the companionship of God, you know. It wasn't until she got a little insight from another character in the book named Aaliyah, and she kind of gave her, like, that awakening, like, okay, life is more than that, and we're not meant to be by ourselves.
Right.
And that was when she was willing to give love a chance again.
Right. And it's sometimes difficult. But it is not sometimes. It is difficult. Especially we as women, we're so emotional, and it's just it's difficult. It is a difficult time. And without the right support system, again, if you just let the things fester and get out of control, i.e. his office, that was a big sign.
Mm-hmm.
So when you let...
Extremely big sign.
Yes, I was like, oh, God, yeah, there needs to seriously be, but yes, Geraldine was, her and her sister, she
yeah.
cracked me up, too. No, I loved her. And her siblings loved her. And the sister, I always find it fascinating when I read about sisterly love, because I have one sister, but we're not close. And so we were raised in different households, so it's a little different. But mm-hmm. I always find it just really, really, I kind of live vicariously through readings when I read about sisters and their relationships, because, again, I have an estranged relationship with my sister. So I was, oh, that's the way sisters are supposed to act.
Right.
You know, I had to
say
the big reading.
Only child.
You are?
Yeah, well, I have other siblings, but I grew up as an only child with my mom. But I did have a cousin that we're really close in age, and I guess you could say we were like sisters. So that relationship is kind of like based on how I know my cousin, who, you know, I grew up with as a sister, would probably relate and try to, you know, help me if I was in a situation like that.
Right. And that's what I imagine that. And me, myself, even though I didn't grow up with my sister, and she's on the other side of the country. If she needed me, me being the person that I am, Johnny on the spot, I would make sure that, you know, I availed myself. And so just the sister, I enjoy the sister bonds, you know, and I know sisters fight and argue and they have disagreements because they're sisters, but they're also women. And that's just how women, you know, act. So I understand that. But at the end of the day, you're sisters. And so I appreciated that because, the, you know, Katrina was like, I'm not going anywhere. You know, you can say what you want, do, act how you want to act. No. Me and Mama got this.
And you got, you have to admit that she was a special character.
Right. So, you know, it is just, that is just so, it's really, you know, because they're like opposites, you know, so I appreciate that. Right. Right. So it's just, it's just very, like I said, it's really real. You know, it's not a real story, but it's, you know, it's something that everyone can pull from, learn from, you know, and gain insight into and have, and I think also have a clear understanding for their brother and sisters who are suffering from mental illness or depression. You will see what signs, because you show, you give the signs, what to look for, what is going on, you know, because Geraldine knew. Geraldine knew before she even went to, you know, before she even had her sister come over. She knew what was going on. She knew something was going on. She knew, you know, she may not have done right by her child growing up. And again, that just goes back to, we don't have a handbook. And, you know, and
we
Geraldine
don't.
Probably carried that guilt, too. She, you know, that...
Of course she
that
did.
That guilt...
Of course.
Yeah, that guilt eats you up.
Well, remember when they actually did have that confrontation, when Sandy did finally address what happened, Geraldine knew that one day this would come to pass.
Right.
She didn't really want to face it, but it was a reality, you know. And even with Trina has some issues too. She has a story herself, you know, because her lifestyle is questionable. You know, there are certain reasons why she did certain things. You know, I didn't hit on it in that particular book, but there might be a sequel.
Of course. You know, that's another thing, and I'll go back to what Iyama said, and I don't even think Iyama said it. I was reading something else, and, you know, I used to look at, you know, say, those prostitutes or, you know, that's just horrible. I don't understand why, you know, they're prostituting themselves and, you know, and selling their bodies like that. But I read something. A lot of the women who walk the streets and are engaged in those activities, either by choice or force, they have dealt with something or have gone through something past that garners and it generates and creates a whole new lifestyle, a whole new attitude on life. And you do things, and it's not necessarily that you want to do those things. It's not necessarily that you even like to do those things. But because life has thrown you some curves that you just, it's difficult. So one of the things, and I believe it was, I can't think of her last name, Pamela is her first name. She was writing about is anybody's daughter, and she was saying she didn't like how they were calling them prostitutes because those are a lot of them are teenage girls, you know,
right,
that have lost their way. And so we judge people, and that from that time on, from the moment I read that and read those words, I didn't call them prostitutes anymore, because then, again, reading words, I understood that because you do a different lifestyle, like Katrina, her lifestyle choices, you do engage in other things that are not necessarily what everyone else would do, but it's because of things that have happened in your history that people don't know or understand, but they judge.
Right. Well, like they say, you can't judge somebody because you never walked or been in the journey that they've been through in life. So it's kind of hard to, you know, judge people. Well, you shouldn't judge people, put it that way.
Right, but we do. And no, you shouldn't, but we do. And right, you know, unless you walked even, I wouldn't even say a mile in someone's shoes, because nowadays you don't even have to walk a mile in their shoes. You know, walk a block.
You'd be amazed.
Right, and what people are dealing with and what they've dealt with, you would be amazed as to how they are even standing and have grown thus far. You just don't know. It's, you know, it always baffles me, you know, when people call, you know, girls, young girls, and you just say all kinds of things, and you judge on what they're wearing or, you know, their language. But, again, it's the way one is raised. But and oftentimes, even though they may have been reared correctly and upright, you can only put into what put into your children. You can't.
Right. But like you said, they might be reared correctly, but there's outside things that can influence a change that can alter a person's personality and the things that they do in life. I even hit on that in this book as far as, like, Joseph and his kids. His kids, they came from a great two-parent home, but with the unfortunate and untimely death of their mother, it altered the way they now maneuvered through life. And maybe things
right.
would have been differently if Joseph could have given them that support that they needed and they was looking for, but he didn't know how to handle his wife, his first wife's death. So
right.
this is what created the chaos that happened in his children's life.
Right. And you know, and that, I think, is a breakdown of males, black males, their emotions. They don't deal, they, you know, we internalize things, but we also, we're emotional, so we at least cry. And
mm-hmm.
crying.
We get that release that's needed.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. But black men, our black men, don't. They, you know, men don't cry. And I think that is
mm-hmm.
such the biggest bowl of malarkey ever. To say that men don't cry, it's just pitiful. It's just, you know, we just do our community just such a big disservice, as if we don't have a bunch of things already stacked against us, you know. And then we, you know, we internalize things and then turn on one another, you know, when we see these types of behaviors without really trying to grasp the full knowledge of what has happened.
Well, you see, even with Joseph, he was classic with that. He didn't know how to show his emotions. He definitely didn't know how to relate to his kids because of their mother dying, his wife dying. And in the process of that, he did the same thing that Sandy was exhibiting, you know, earlier in the book. He was trying to forget everything. So he
right.
act like his wife never existed. You know, it was one part in the book where his oldest daughter, Renee, said that he didn't even talk to us about our mom's death. He just packed up all her things and gave it away to the Salvation Army. So he just wanted to forget everything. He didn't want to deal with anything. And in the process of that, his kids, the streets claimed his kids. In unfortunate circumstances, claimed his kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the downside of when men don't deal with emotions, they don't deal with reality, they don't deal with feelings, especially if they're left to care for kids, young kids.
Right.
That can be a very real problem.
Right. Absolutely. I thought it was Jess Taulier. I saw an old clip today someone put. And I forget what she said she wrote the paper, but she was speaking to a young man. And I think it was goodbye to a 19-year-old or something to 19, goodbye to 19 or whatever, something like that. But what she was saying was that, you know, it hurt her heart that she would have to lock up or send away these young men. And you know, they always wondered why women are so angry, so bitter, so this, so that. They talk about it. It's because we're not equipped as the head of the household. So when they leave and become either incarcerated or emotionally, they leave us. They leave us abandoned emotionally, physically, and sexually. They leave us to our own devices, and we're not equipped to handle that burden. And so, you know, you do, and you have all these, so you're leaving these women and these children to fend for themselves, and you leave them to the streets. And it just becomes a vicious cycle, because then they will have children, and they haven't dealt with their issues, or they don't know how to deal with their issues, so now they see their dad, you know, freezing up, bottling up things, packing things up, forgetting things. So now they're going to thinking, okay, this is how you handle things.
Right. Well, in the case of Joseph's kids, they knew that that's not how you handle things. They actually begged their father to talk to them. And then once when Sandy came along, that was just like the icing on the cake as far as any type of rejection that he was exhibiting towards them. It was like they really felt like they had lost their father, you know.
Right.
Along with the fact that they had lost their mother already now, with Sandy coming on board, it was like, okay, now we've lost our father, and we never actually got a chance to claim him because he disassociated himself with us. So, you know, things just really took an ugly turn, but being that Sandy had evolved into the woman that she became after going through her journey in life, she was a huge blessing for Joseph and his kids.
Right. Yeah. See, I'm not the one giving storylines away. So we are talking to... Yes, go ahead.
Well, I'm not giving the storyline away, but, I mean, it's definitely more than that, you know. But, I mean, there needs to be some type of, you know, little synopsis of what actually love or loyalty is about, other than just, you know, Sandy being depressed. Because the story is so much more than that, you know.
Yes. And it is. It is. It's about love and finding your way and the journey to get there and finding love again. You know, it's one thing to love once, but then to have love more than once, real love, that's a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a blessing. So tell us what Nikki does when she's not writing.
Nikki works like everybody else. I have a regular job, 8:30 to 4:30.
Believe me, I understand that one.
So there's nothing.
When do you find the time to write?
Usually, like, when I'm in transit on my way to work, coming home from work, my days off, sometimes when I'm, you know, sitting up late at night, you know, looking at TV, I'll turn it off and write. Especially if I have a thought, an idea, I'll just jot it down and take it from there.
So when you're in transit, how are you writing it? How are you doing it in transit?
Well, my commute, I take the train back and forth.
Oh, okay.
So my commute is anywhere between 35 to 45 minutes. So, you know, I get in a great deal from there. So that's roughly 2 hours a day. Then, you know, when I'm on lunch break or whatever, I'll jot down a few things. So, you know, there's plenty of time.
So, do you read as well as write?
You know, I used to be an avid reader, but when I'm in the process of writing, I try not to read anything because I don't want something that I read or an idea that I read to spill over into what I'm writing.
Right.
So I try to steer clear of reading other people's work when I'm writing.
So what do we see in the future?
Well, the near future, I gave a short excerpt on the back of Love All the OST. It's called Girls in the Choir. That will be out sometime this winter. I'm aiming between February and March. It's about six girls who are dealing with some of the deadly sins, and they're a part of a choir, a Brooklyn choir. And it's just going to show how their journey to where they are now in life and how do they get past that. So that's the very near future. But I am aiming to hopefully find an agent in a publishing house so I can, you know, move this more nationwide, you know, international. You know, I'm just trying to broaden my audience a little bit more and get this on some.
So currently you're self-publishing?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So how many books have you self-published so far?
This one here is my fourth, and I'm working on my fifth.
So how long have you been doing this?
I started writing, I would say, about 20 years ago. I was inspired by Sister Soldier, a book she wrote, which was really good, called The Coldest Winter Ever. And when I read that, I've always grown up in East New York, Brooklyn, so I've seen a lot. Been through a lot, so I could really relate to that story. So I was like, well, let me write my own story, not pertaining to me particularly, but, you know, it was just like a story of a young girl growing up in the ghetto, and it was called The Darkness and Sunshine. It was kind of like, you know, Coldest Winter Ever, Darkness and Sunshine. So that was my baby. I never published it. I never will because, you know, now reading back on it, it's like, ooh, no. Mm-mm. But that's how it started. And then from there, I wrote 2-3 chapters here, storyline here. This book here, Love of Loyalty, this book is actually about, I would say, 10 years old. I submitted it to Ebony because they had this thing where it was like a short story. So I submitted it to Ebony. They was having some type of contest. They didn't accept it, but the idea still stayed with me, and it was originally called The Art of Forgiveness. After I did Sins of a Pastor's Wife, I picked it back up again, and that's when I developed the story more, and I said, you know what, let me develop the story, and I changed the name, and here we are.
Yes, Sins of a Pastor's Wife. Another one of my favorites.
And I have two other ones out there. They're not Christian focused. It's called The Reassignment and The Perfect Man. Those are also, but they're short stories. They're short stories. More of an erotic type of twist.
Oh, so she do that too. She's a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
So, which houses? I'm gonna leave that alone for right now. Which houses have you submitted to?
I'm sorry, repeat that.
Which publishing houses have you submitted to?
I haven't. That's actually on my agenda for this year.
Okay.
I'm doing my research now. Actually looking to see which houses will take unsolicited material, because it's really hard sometimes if you don't have an agent. So, you know, if I can find an agent, hooray. But if not, then I will have to, you know, submit to houses that will accept unsolicited material. So that's my focus for this year coming.
So are you looking at, like, major publishing houses or, like, startup publishing houses, or which way?
I'm not prejudiced to any way. However it comes, it will be a blessing, because it would be a step forward. So small house, big house, it really doesn't matter.
Okay. Alrighty. Well, that's to know. That's really good to know. So we have a few minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we have been speaking with Nikki Austin, author of Love or Loyalty. You will love this one as well. I guarantee it. I promise I will not steer you wrong. Nikki, I'm sorry, forgive me. Please tell the fans, those who are listening online and on live, on the air, how they can connect with you and where they can purchase your book.
Well, currently you can only get it at Amazon.com. Just type in my name, Nikki Austin, or you can plug in the title of the book if you know it. I have a listing of all my books at the end of every book that has been published through Amazon. You can find me on Facebook, Nikki Austin, and also Instagram, Nichols, N-I-K-A-L-S 42.
I will have to start following you. On Instagram, I'm so bad with social networks. I'm horrible with social. I can never remember my passwords, number one. And then I get bored with social networks very easily if they're not continuously. And Twitter is a little hard for me, because I try to read everything. You can't read everything on Twitter. So
yeah, I'm not really a fan of Twitter.
Yeah, it's difficult to kind of keep up with all of that. So. But I'm going to start following you on Instagram. So, yeah, I learned something new. So really quickly, give us five things that we don't know about Nikki Austin.
Oh, wow. Oh, I don't know. I guess.
Five things that no one knows.
That no one knows? Well, if they don't know, then it's probably not meant to be known.
Yeah. things that we don't know. Someone else can know it. Five things that we, the fans, your audience, do not know.
Oh, well. My patience is short. Oh, yeah, extremely. Let's see. I love to laugh. I don't know. I mean,
there's three more. You're doing well.
Three more. I don't know. I don't know. Why you put me on a spot like this, Chanel?
Because I need to learn new things.
New things. I am a fan of Donald Goin's book. He was one of the first authors that I read that really put me in touch with the reality of living in this world that I come from. What else? I love to travel. I can appear to be unapproachable at first meeting people, but the thing about it is, and many would disagree with me, especially people that know me, but I am shy at first.
What is your sign?
Taurus.
Oh, April? Or May?
Yeah, April.
Okay. Yeah, Taurus, okay. I can see that. I can see. Not the shy. I wouldn't say that you were unapproachable.
You know why I say that? Because if I'm, like, walking around and I'm in my own world, my face isn't necessarily pleasant. Like, I tend to frown, and sometimes people will say to me, what's wrong? Why are you frowning? It's because I'm in either deep thought or, I mean, that's just my natural face. But once when you approach me and we start talking, then you'll know, oh, okay, she's nice. She's crazy, you know, but that's just my face, my natural face. So that's why I say, like, I could appear to be unapproachable, but I'm not.
Send an email or a tweet or a text or whatever I said, and you responded, and here we are once again. So yeah. I don't know about the unapproachable thing. I did like
You have to actually, I think that's more like a physical thing, like you have to actually be in front and see me, like, you know, before actually talking to me, like, observe me from a distance and be like, I don't know, because she's frowning, her face doesn't look too pleasant, but that's just my natural face. It's not meant to be interpreted as any other kind of way. It's just that's the way I just naturally look. But once you approach me and we start talking, then you'll know, oh, she's a chill person, you know. There's nothing wrong with her.
Right. Well, Nikki, as always, it has been a pleasure. I've learned a couple of new things this evening. And, again, you know, I am a fan of your work. I appreciate the work that you do. You put out material. I wish you much success, especially in finding a publishing house. I do know a couple. I'll email you.
Thank you.
Publishers that I am very, very fond of, and all of her authors. And actually, I've read every last one of her authors as well as hers. I'm very fond of this publishing house, and they all do good work. So I will definitely send you an email in a little bit with her information so that you can connect
with her. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks.
Yes. So I know you're a busy woman, so I'm not going to hold you any further, but thank you so much for graciously taking out some time to sit and chat with me. It's never an interview. It's always a conversation amongst two sisters. So I appreciate it greatly.
And I appreciate you seeking me out and asking me to do the conversation.
So, and I appreciate the listeners, even though you don't press one or send in your questions. I do appreciate the fact that you are sitting in and listening to our conversation and that you are engaging and actually purchasing and reading the material. So I appreciate that greatly. And again,
yes, I appreciate it, and I thank all readers as well. Thank you.
Absolutely. My request is that we do pray for our community and our mental health, as well as our children. A lot of communities are experiencing bomb threats at the schools. There's probably have been one nearly every day for the last week. So we really need to commit ourselves to pray for our children and our community. And one for another, just pray one for another. And as always, I love you all. Until next week. Take care. Thanks again, Nikki.
Good night.
Good night.